Christ's name tonight. I was thinking we had 7 new members tonight, and the church there in Acts had 7,000. An evening like this could have taken a little while. But welcome to all of y'all. It's a blessing to see the church grow. It really is. It feels a bit a little bit odd to preach on a Sunday evening. Usually I go home from church on a Sunday morning, and if I had to preach that day, I'm done. And I got to go home from church today, and I still had to get ready to preach tonight. But you know what? I decided if I can't preach God's word anytime, that's my problem. That's not God's problem. Timing isn't the time of the message isn't the thing. We need to be ready to speak at any time. So that's what I want to try to do tonight. Y'all know I have a little bit of an imagination at times, and I don't know if that's good or if that's bad. But let's start out by using our imagination just a little bit tonight. So let's imagine something odd. Let's imagine you heard a rumor tonight that there was a man out there that was looking for you, and his name was Elon Musk. What would you think? What would you think if Elon, you heard through the grapevine or through some news article or something that Elon Musk was looking for you or for me, Jason Gingrich? Well, first of all, if you were like me, you wouldn't believe it. Elon Musk, I can assure you, has no idea that I'm even walking on the same planet as him, which is maybe why he's trying so hard to go to Mars. Maybe he thinks I'm there. I don't know. But Elon Musk does not know who Jason Gingrich is. He has no idea, I'm sure. And I really doubt he knows any of y'all. But for this purposes of this discussion, we're going to say you heard the rumor he was looking for you. And I wouldn't believe it, and I would laugh about it. Why in the world would one of the wealthiest men in the world look for me? Wouldn't make any sense. He doesn't need me. And then imagine that one day, of all things, a car pulls into your drive, and a man gets out, and he comes to the door, and he says, I work for Elon Musk, and I'm his assistant, and he sent me here to find you. At that point, I might start believing a little bit, but it would still seem really odd. Why would he want me? And the man says, Elon wanted me to set up this weird-looking contraption at your place so that he can communicate with you. He wants to talk to you. He actually does. And the man sets up this weird contraption that says Starlink on the side of it, and he leaves. And now you're connected to Starlink internet services. That would seem a little bit, you'd start scratching your head. Maybe he actually is looking for me. Maybe he does want me. And then of all things, your phone rings and you answer it, and it's a man with a South African accent. And it really is Elon Musk. And he really does want to talk to you. I would be thinking this is strange. And he tells you he doesn't want anything from you. He doesn't need your money. He doesn't want you to work in his Tesla factory. All he wants to do is chat with you, visit with you, build a little bit of a relationship with you. He heard your name and it intrigued him, and he wants to talk to you, and he hangs up. Now I would be suspicious and flabbergasted, and I would say he's probably never going to call again, and all of the above. But he calls you the next day, and he makes small talk, and he calls you the next day. And you start to kind of know Elon. And then one day you mention to him that your electric bill's high. It's summertime and the air conditioner's running. And next day a van shows up that says Tesla solar power on the side. And he puts solar panels on your roof and a battery box in your garage. And the man says you'll never have to deal with another electric bill again. You're welcome from Elon. And then your car breaks, And Carvana shows up with a new Tesla on the back for you, or a Cybertruck. I'd be embarrassed to drive one, but that's what he builds. So we'd say, and all he ever says is, I don't want anything from you. Just stay in touch with me. I just want a little bit of conversation with you. That's all I want. Now, that's a made-up story, and that's never going to happen, I can assure you. And I'm not necessarily an Elon Musk fan. In fact, some of his accomplishments are astounding. I won't deny that. And the fact that he's been very successful in some things is astounding. But he obviously is not living a Bible-centered lifestyle, and he's not living a lifestyle any Christian would live. Let's just say it that way. I don't want to judge him, but that's how it would look from seeing the way he's lived his life. He's kind of left a wreckage of people behind him. But as shocking as that would be, that somebody like Elon, if he would actually do that, would want a relationship with me. Y'all probably know where I'm going with this by now. But let me tell you the good news. And that is that there is actually another man out there that is infinitely more wealthy, more famous than Elon Musk ever has been or ever will be. And Elon will someday bow down to him and proclaim him the Son of God. That's the truth. He will. And that man's name is Jesus. And contrary to how I laid out in the story, Jesus is a problem solver. Jesus will solve your problems. He may not do it the way I laid out in the story. He may not do it by immediately making so we never have an electric bill again, or that we get a new car when our one breaks. Sometimes God builds us up through hard times in life, and he lets us figure some things out. He doesn't just come in and immediately make so everything is always perfect for us. That's not how Jesus works. It's not how God works. He may allow us to have financial setbacks and health problems and relationship problems and whatever else, but he always has our best interest in mind, this man Jesus. And the amazing thing is, this man Jesus is so much more famous than Elon, and he wants a relationship with you. He wants communion with you, and he wants it with me. That's Jesus. We know this, but sometimes we have to actually, it doesn't register in my mind. And it hits me. Jesus wants a relationship with each of us personally. One of the communion, if you look up the meaning, has a few different meanings, but one of them means intimate fellowship. Jesus wants fellowship with you and I. He left the glories of heaven to make it easier for you and I to have a relationship with him. That's hard to believe. If any of you have ever been off on a vacation, you know, maybe you as a family at a reunion rent a nice house, and it's big and it's clean and it's nice and it's on the lake or whatever, and everything's almost perfect. And then you come home and you have to live at home again. And most of us are very blessed with nice places to live, but it's not near as nice as the place we left. That's times however many numbers of Jesus leaving heaven to come down here. He left heaven to come down here so that he could build a relationship, a better relationship with us. And that to me is somewhat of what communion is all about. And it's the communion service tonight is a reminder of what he's done for us all those years ago, for us forgetful creatures called humans. So often, I take for granted what Jesus has done for me, and it's to my shame. Let's read from Matthew 11. This may seem a bit of an odd communion passage, but just bear with me. Matthew 11, we'll read 25 through 30. And at that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and the prudent and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in thy sight. All things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father. Neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. Come, then we have these famous verses here. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. So Jesus just got done, if we would have read a little further up in the chapter, he just got done cursing several cities for their cold-hearted rejection of his teachings. And then he seemed almost odd. He launched into this prayer of thanksgiving right after such harsh criticism for these cities, but he did. And verse 28 and 30 are the famous comfort words that Christians have heard and for centuries now. And he says, come. This famous man, Jesus, is telling us to come to him. He actually wants me to come. He wants you to come. And he's longing for that communion with you and I. It's astounding. All ye that labor and are heavy laden. I know we're Christians, we're humans. We have problems, day-to-day problems. We have things we work through at times. But I don't think Christians should, as a habit, go around with long, sad faces. I don't think we should. I know there's times when we're discouraged and we're down for the moment. That goes with living life. But for the most part, Christians should be happy, excited people to follow Christ. And here Jesus is begging us to just come. Lay your burdens down at me. I'll take care of them. And then he says, it's almost odd. He says, come to me with your problems, and I'm going to put a yoke on you. That's not really good advertisement, is it? Come to me and I'm gonna wear you, burden you down with something else around your neck. That's not really what we want to hear. But if we listen to what I believe he's trying to say, he just got done talking about the evils of these three cities. And I think he's seen the burden that those people in those three cities were wearing. And it was not a good burden. It was a horrible burden of Satan that these people were living under. And I think Jesus was saying, you're going to wear one yoke or the other. It's either going to be the world's yoke or it's going to be my yoke. And I can tell you, my yoke is easier than the world's yoke. So come to me, drop that yoke, come to me, and I'll put a much easier yoke on you. It's going to be a lot easier to go through life with my yoke than the world's yoke. And I'm going to help you do it. That's a win-win situation. How blessed are we to have that? And on top of all that, he was willing to come down here and make the path as easy as he could for all of us. It's amazing. He didn't say it's going to be a walk in the park and everything's going to be easy all our life long. He didn't promise any of that stuff. But he did say he'll help us and it will be easier. And with that promise, we can do it. We can do it. We can live a vibrant life for the Lord with that promise. He walked with us for 33 years and he knows our life. He knows our temptations. He went through it. He did. And he's at the right hand of the Father advocating for us. We don't have to go through a priest. We don't have to offer up a lamb. We have it so much easier than they did in the Old Testament. We're a blessed, blessed people. Jesus set up this communion time so that we don't forget and we don't take for granted what he's done. And just something else to consider. Sometimes I wonder, in fact, I know I do, I unintentionally make my yoke on life harder on myself, and I call it Jesus's yoke. You know what I mean? Let me explain. Sometimes I feel like I'm overly busy. I'm not any busier than anybody else here. But I put projects on my, say I have a project around the house I'm gonna do. And I like doing projects around the house. But I get my materials of whatever I'm building and I put them on a pile and I get ready to do this project. I'm excited to do it because I like to do little things like that. And it seems like inevitably when I do something like that, extra church work comes up. And I see this project that I've been longing to do and I want to do it and I can't do it because I have to do whatever there's church be or there's church related work. And I say, this Christian burden's heavy. I have stuff I want to do at home and I have to go do this church work stuff. I think in that case I'm overloading myself with work that in the end of life isn't going to make a whole lot of difference. And I'm blaming it on the Christian yoke. That's not the Christian yoke. Our first calling is to be, do what we can for your church. Do what you can for your family. That should be our first calling. Anything above that, I don't think we can blame on the Christian, on Jesus' yoke around us. I think sometimes I can make it a little easier on myself. Maybe I need to let some projects go. Maybe I need to just not do some things. Just something that came to my mind that I need to be aware of as I was studying for this. How hard do I actually make it? How many of my problems are self-induced because I make myself too busy on things that don't matter? Let's read from Deuteronomy 8. I don't want to spend a whole lot more time, but I do want to read this chapter. And not this chapter, a few verses out of this chapter. Eight 11 through 20. This was God's warning to the Israelites. Starting in verse 11, beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwell therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thy heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, which led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee and he might prove thee to do that which is good at thy latter end. And thou say in thy heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. For thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. And if it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall ye perish because ye would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. So that was wrote, what, thousands of years ago? And it just seems like that's America all over today, doesn't it? You read the first part of that chapter when everything's multiplied, your herds, your flocks, your silver, your gold, and you're living in good houses and all this stuff. It sounds like America. And it sounds like I have a pretty good life. I do. Sometimes it maybe even sounds a little bit like me. And when I'm in that situation, do I forget God? It's human tendency that we do, that when all our earthly supplies are mostly met, we tend to forget God. And he's warning us, don't do it. Don't do it. And that's part of what a service like this tonight is about. It's about remembering. God doesn't want us to forget. We're humans and we forget. Don't forget. I'll read one more out of Luke 22. It just seems right to read this before communion service. I know Ernie read some of this stuff this morning. But it, for some reason, it just seems appropriate to read about the Last Supper. I might just read it and not make a lot of comments here. Luke 22:7-20. And listen to verse 15 when we get there. Jesus' desire to be with his friends and his followers. Luke 22:7-20. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed, and he sent Peter and John, saying, "Go, prepare us the Passover that we may eat." And they said unto him, "What wilt thou that we prepare?" And he said unto them, "Behold, when you are entered into the city, there shall a man meet you, bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him to the house where he entereth in. And ye shall say unto the goodman of the house, 'The master saith unto thee, Where is the guest chamber, that I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he shall show you a large upper room, furnished. There make ready." And they went and found as he said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And when the hour was come, he sat down, and the 12 apostles with him. And he said unto them, "With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God." And he took the cup and gave thanks and said, "Take this, divide it among yourselves. For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come." And he took the bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it unto them, saying, "This is my body which is given for you. This do in remembrance of me." Likewise also the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the New Testament of my blood, which is shed for you. But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is on the table, and truly the Son of Man goeth as it was determined, but woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed." I think I'll close with that. Let's kneel for prayer.